Hello and welcome to the reading of the Courier for Tuesday, the 19th of September. And I'm your narrator, Peter Welch, and you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Well, how are you all doing today? I hope everything is good out your way today. Let's take a look at the Courier's headlines here. I've got Revitalized Fair has fun for all. NCC puts on its 113th fair with music, competitions, and exhibits for everyone. All right, let's see what it has to say here. The National Cattle Congress Fair in Waterloo. Headliners are returning to the National Cattle Congress Fair, Hippodrome, for concerts including Tracy Lawrence and Everclear. The 113th annual event opens Wednesday with a fair preview at 4 p.m. and carnival rides starting at 5 p.m. Major events begin Thursday and run through Sunday. Senior Day, bike nights at Thursday, and Veterans Appreciation Day is on Saturday. Dairy cattle and llama shows, a sanctioned blue ribbon barbecue contest, home arts exhibits and competitions, carnival rides in Midway, a little miss contest, demonstrations, activities, entertainment, exhibitions, and food vendors will be offered throughout the five-day fair. That sounds like a lot of fun. This year's theme is Everyone's Fair. Hours are 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day, except Sunday when the fair closes at 6 p.m. Adult general gate admission is $10 and $8 for seniors, with children under age 8 admitted free. Not Quite Brothers will perform in concert Thursday from 7 to 11 p.m. on the Hippodrome stage. And admission is free with $10 gate admission. The performance kicks off a weekend of concerts. People have been asking us about bringing big-name entertainers back to the fair. We haven't done that for a few years, and this year we decided to give fairgoers what they're asking for, said NCC manager Jim Koch. NCC board president Deb Pullen Van Oken agreed. I think that people are starting to notice that we're doing things differently for the fair. We want to attract more people and offer events that are engaging, entertaining, and fun. Coke loves every minute of the fair. This is our 113th year, and we want to be around for another 100 years. We want people to come out and enjoy the fair, walk around the fairgrounds, and have fun. I like seeing little kids' faces light up with excitement when the Tree of Life or Buford the Bear in his little truck talks to them, he said. Pullen Van Elken hopes that the concerts will bring fairgoers onto the grounds. The fair has to make money or we can't exist anymore. Concerts are a big win for us. Thursday night's concert features Central Iowa's Not Quite Brothers, a cover band that has steadily been tearing up stages across the country with their party style and eclectic playlist. The band formed in 2018 with twins Sam Johnson vocals and Isaac Johnson on the guitar, along with friends Cooper Kerkorian guitar and Ben Schmelzer drums and Nathan Klein on bass. Country stars Tracy Lawrence and Chris Cagle will be on stage Friday. Doors open at 5 p.m. with the concert beginning at 7 p.m. And tickets are $35, not including $10 gate admissions. Lawrence is noted for such hits as Find Out Who Your Friends Are, Better Man, Better Off, Sticks and Stones, Alibis, If the World Had a Front Porch, Time Marches On, Lessons Learned, and Paint Me, Birmingham. He is a Grammy-nominated double platinum-selling artist and a winner of the Country Music Association's Male Vocalist of the Year Award. Louisiana-born Chris Cagle hit the country charts with such tunes as I Breathe In, I Breathe Out, What a Beautiful Day, Chicks Dig It, What Kind of Gone, Kiss Me Baby, and Let There Be Cowgirls. Everclear with the Altaris and Pink Spiders will make a step, or I should say should make a stop, excuse me, a stop on their national tour at the fair for a 7 p.m. concert on Saturday. Tickets are available online at everclearmusic.com/tour. Featuring Art Alexakias, vocals and guitar, Davey French guitar, Freddie Herrera bass, and Brian Nolan drums. Everclear is one of the leading alternative rock bands to emerge in the 1990s. The Grammy-nominated band celebrated its 30th anniversary in 2020 and has sold 6 million records with 12 top 40 hits, including Wonderful, Santa Monica, and Everything to Everyone. The band released its limited edition album, Live at the Whiskey A Go-Go, on September 8th. On Sunday, Benjamin William Hastings, a Grammy-nominated and Dove Award-winning North Irish singer, songwriter, and worship leader, will close out the concert series. Doors open at 2 p.m. and the performance begins at 3 p.m. Tickets are $12, not including the gated admission. The National Cattle Congress Fair is widely recognized for its dairy cattle show. And Coach said that 300 to 400 dairy cows from five different states have been registered for shows at Pullen Simonson Arena during the fair. The Supreme Champion Dairy Heifer Scholarship Show is at noon on Saturday in the arena. Okay, let's see what else we've got going on here. Teen arrested in aunt's car theft in Waterloo. Police detained a teenager after he allegedly committed multiple crimes on Saturday morning. Officers were called to the 400 block of Pine Street around 8 a.m. Saturday for a report of a stolen vehicle. When police arrived, the driver of the vehicle took off and crashed into a fence one block away at 515 Pine Street. According to a Waterloo police officer, there was damage to the fence and minimal damage to the car. The driver was identified as a 14-year-old boy who is the nephew of the car owners. It is not clear how the car was stolen. Police also found a small bag of marijuana on the teen. The boy was charged with interference, for trying to pull away when being detained, criminal mischief for damaging the fence, possession of marijuana, and theft of a vehicle. The theft is classified as a felony. Man charged with false statements in gun buys in Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been charged with allegedly providing misleading information when he bought three handguns in 2022. A grand jury for the district court for the Northern District of Iowa handed up an indictment charging Raitress Jamon Haywood, age 26, with three counts of making a false statement during a firearm purchase on the 8th of September. The government is also seeking forfeiture of the guns. Haywood pleaded not guilty during an initial court appearance on Friday. A detention hearing is set for Thursday. Authorities allege that Haywood declared an address on City View Street in Waterloo when he bought a 9mm Canic TP9SF handgun on the 27th of October in 2022. He used the same address when he bought a 9mm Stoger STR9 pistol on November 9th and a 9mm Taurus G3C pistol on the 22nd of November. Court records allege that Haywood didn't live at the City View address. Cedar Falls Public Safety hosting drug take back site October 28th. Cedar Falls Public Safety will be hosting a site for the Drug Enforcement Administration's National Prescription Drug Take Back Day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on October 28th. Citizens can dispose of expired, unwanted, or unused prescription drugs at the Public Safety Center at 4600 South Main Street. The receptacle is placed just inside the front door of the facility. The community can also contact Public Safety at area code 319-273-8612. during that time to have an officer visit their home to pick up the prescription drugs as well. If citizens wish to remain in their cars on site, they can also call public safety and an officer will be out to pick up the items. All solid dosage pharmaceutical products and liquids in consumer containers may be accepted, including tablets, capsules, and patches. Liquid products such as cough syrup should remain sealed in their original container. If disposing of medication in an original container, individuals are encouraged to remove any identifying information from the prescription label. Intravenous solutions, injectables, syringes, and other sharps and illegal drugs will not be accepted. Vapes and other e-cigarette devices are accepted only after the batteries are removed. If the battery cannot be removed, consumers can check with large electronic chain stores on who may accept the devices for proper disposal. All right, let's move on here to our next page here. Let's take a look. Cannabis drinks, edibles, legal for minors in Iowa. New State Bureau considers proposal to close loopholes. Iowans, including minors, can legally buy high-potency marijuana drinks and gummies because of loopholes in state and federal laws, according to leaders in the state's new Bureau of Cannabis Regulation. While 5 to 10 milligrams of THC can be intoxicating, some drinkable products have 1,000 milligrams or more per can. According to the Bureau staff, these products often are marketed as heavy because of the large dosages of THC by weight of the product. There's quite a high ceiling with these products, and there's very limited regulation, Bureau Chief Owner Parker told the Iowa Cannabidiol Board at a meeting on Friday. In general, especially in states like Iowa, where cannabis forms are limited, these products are more popular and there's more demand considering they are legal. Iowa's medical marijuana program, created in 2015 and expanded several times since, allows for people with certain medical conditions to buy products licensed in Iowa with a maximum of 4.5 grams of THC per 90-day purchases in most cases. THC is the primary chemical marijuana plant that causes the high. Iowa's consumable hemp program limits the THC in products, including food, drinks, and lotions, to 0.3% by weight. If you have a 12-ounce beverage, 0.3% is 1.02 grams or 1,020 milligrams. And these high-potency cannabis products often drinks are sold in brightly colored cans and combined with caffeine and sugar are worlds away from joints smoked by previous generations. A recent New York Times reports that the story of a young woman who was using cannabis vape pens regularly when she started having occasions where she passed out in the shower or vomited regularly. It wasn't until 2021, after a half dozen trips to the emergency room for stomach illness, including some hospital stays, that a gastroenterologist diagnosed her with cannabinoid hypermeus syndrome, and that's a condition that causes recurrent vomiting in heavy marijuana users, the story goes on to say. Iowa has about 1,000 registered consumable hemp manufacturers and retailers. Parker said that the registration fee is $475 for both groups. Although the state has no age restrictions for purchasing these products, some retailers have set their own age limits, he says. Regulating Iowa's consumable program has been challenging, with some Iowa-based registrants complaining last year that the state was overrun with unlicensed products. Limitations on these high THC products, who can buy them, likely will take legislation, Parker says. But because the medical marijuana program and consumable hemp programs were merged on the 1st of July, as part of a government reorganization. There currently is no governing board over consumable hemp. That's interesting. All right, let's see, what else do we have going on here in the Courier today? Let's turn now to the Cedar Valley section of the Courier. This story, students experience great outdoors. Hanson sixth graders go to Hartman Reserve for School of the Wild. Okay. Cedar Falls, a brand new program, is giving sixth grade students a week full of experiences in the outdoors of Hartman Reserve Nature Center. Hanson Elementary School kicked off the School of the Wild last week as part of the Cedar Falls Community Schools' new lessons for the sixth grade class and a statewide initiative of the University of Iowa to increase outdoor learning experiences for elementary and middle school students. Cedar Falls Schools now has the second most number of kids involved in the curriculum. The first is Iowa City Community Schools. Previously, the most comparable experience for Cedar Falls sixth graders was a one-day trip to Big Woods Lake. A lot of the kids haven't had these opportunities out at the Hartman Reserve, said sixth grade teacher Jeremy Swanson. They can do things they've never done before. Rather than learn about these things through books or videos, they can be immersed in the whole idea of what it means to be in a wetland or in a prairie, and it really comes alive for them. He was leading kids in lessons related to a passion of his, outdoor skills, and was guiding the kids in activities like putting up a tent, orienting themselves on a map, or starting a fire. To be able to share that with my students and have them say, "Going backpacking doesn't sound like such a bad idea and might actually be fun," is a cool feeling, he says. In addition to outdoor skills, there were four other areas of focus: the wetlands, prairies, the woodlands, and birds. The environment that they are learning in is a complete 180-degree shift from our daily routines in the classrooms at work. So I enjoy seeing them navigate the week in an outdoor classroom environment, said Jared Perkey. Perkel, the teacher leading the wetlands activities. The volume of teamwork, physical activity, and hands-on activities that they get to experience challenges them in ways that we don't always get to see in the classroom. Fresh off checking out Lake Manit, Bethany Lucan, age 11, found it's interesting how shallow the water was and enjoyed getting the chance to check out all the sand bars, a first-time experience for her. It was fun, she said. We sang songs and found different things like fish, snails, and frogs. For her next adventure, Lucan's now has a repertoire of outdoor survival skills and more knowledge about what to bring. "Don't forget to bring multiple layers of clothing, long pants, and toilet paper," she said. We also learned how to identify poison ivy, which already knew, and different trees with diseases. Another highlight of her experience was learning about various types of birds and how they're tracked with different technology. Arian Pradeep, age 11, was among a group that recently put up a tent with little to no instructions. It was a bit of a challenge when it collapsed and we'd have to do it all over again or have to hold it down so it doesn't blow away, he said. Pradeep also recalled learning about how Native Americans used to throw spears as means to hunt bison. One of his classmates, Clara Strauss, age 12, was one of the more experienced when it came to the outdoors, but admitted a lot of what she partook in was new. One of the more eye-opening experiences was when they were asked to lay down on the ground and listen to the woods. There was a lot more noise than I had realized, she said. She enjoyed her experience setting a fire, a newer skill for her, and discovered while exploring the reserve how there were a lot more trails than she had realized. There were scavenger hunts and seminars, and also to keep them busy, as well as the various critters. We found like 8 frogs, she said. We called one of the cooler parts of the outdoors. It's been so much fun. Supreme Court goes on the road. Justices to hear case Tuesday at high school. In Waverly, the Iowa Supreme Court will take its show on the road Tuesday to hear oral arguments in Waverly. Justices from the High Court will also travel to area schools to talk about the Iowa judicial system and the role of the courts in Iowa on Tuesday and Wednesday. Oral arguments in the Supreme Court's consideration of Iowa versus Stephen Andrew Arrieta will begin at 7 p.m. at the Waverly Shell Rock High School Auditorium, located at 1405 4th Street Southwest. The case is out of Worth County and involves the challenge to a drug charge stemming from a traffic stop. Arrieta is arguing he was unlawfully detained while awaiting the arrival of a drug detection dog and challenging the reliability and training of the dog. The proceedings are open to the public, and a public reception with the Supreme Court justices will be in the auditorium lobby, sponsored by the Bremer County Bar Association. Following arguments, justices will be in classrooms on Tuesday and Wednesday. Justice David May will visit Benton High School. Justice Christopher McDonald will visit Waverly Shell Rock High School. And Justice Thomas Waterman will be at Alwine High School on Tuesday afternoon. Okay, Cedar Valley, Iowa section of the paper. Lincoln Dinner brings together County GOP. 130 attend the Sunday event in Waterloo. About 130 people came together for the Blackhawk County Republican Party's annual Lincoln Dinner on Sunday night at the Elks Club. It's the party's largest annual fundraiser, serving as a reminder of the importance of the U.S. Constitution on Constitution Day. It's also an opportunity to hear update from several current office holders and candidates at the local, state, and federal levels. I was pleased. Everybody pulled together, and I saw good energy for local candidates and got lots of good positive feedback from members about getting out there, finding good local candidates, and supporting those candidates who represent our good Republican conservative values, said Craig Lohman, a county party chairperson. The lineup includes U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, Cedar Falls, Councilmember Dave Sires, Blackhawk County, Supervisor Dave Trelka, and Iowa Senator Annette Sweeney. Presidential candidates E.W. Jackson and Ryan Binkie also spoke, as well as Iowa Senate candidate James McCullough, Cedar Falls City Council candidates Gabe Grootwies, and Waterloo City Council candidate Steve Simon. A number of tables, also were set up by representatives of various campaigns for the presidency. All came together with different messages and levels of emotions as part of the 4-hour event. Sires pointed out that it was Senator Chuck Grassley's 90th birthday. Grassley was in attendance last year, but was not there on Sunday. The Cedar Valley's councilman gave an inspiring speech after telling attendees that he bought a whole box of constitutions for anyone who wanted one, and shared an anecdote about visiting a Waterloo Catholic school to drop some off and talk politics. We need to stick together. We need to not backstab and fight with other Republicans. It's us that's going to win it, and we're going to have to do it now, said Sires. when we were on our way over here, I was reminded about why the chicken crossed the road, to show the possum and the skunk that it could be done. And that's what we need to do as Republicans, he said. We need to win. We need to fight. We need to take back our country. And the Constitution, the people give the power to the government, not the government giving power to the people. The number of Republican active central committee members includes 45 to 50 people. Lohman described the party as upbeat and entertaining a good positive message as people pull together ahead of caucuses after the local party went through a bit of a turmoil related to differences in personalities. The Lincoln dinner happened a day after Iowa Democratic Party's leadership committees met and voted to hold the in-person portion of its 2024 presidential caucuses on the 15th of January, the same day Iowa Republicans will also be doing the same thing. Iowa Democrats set 2024 caucus date for January 15th. Mail-in process to pick nominee still hasn't been settled. Iowa Democrats voted on Saturday to hold their 2024 caucuses on the 15th of January, the same day as Republicans. The date fills in one detail as the party works to plan its calendar and presidential nominating contest after being booted from being the first in the nation presidential nominating contest by the National Party earlier this year. The date also falls on Martin Luther King Day, a federal holiday. Under the party's proposal, the caucuses would only be a party organizing meeting while the presidential preferences count that has historically put the caucuses in the national spotlight will be held via a mail-in process at a different time. The party has not settled on the dates for the mail-in presidential preference window to be in line with the national party's rules. The mail-in process would need to be held after the other party states have held their primaries. National Democrats earlier this year reshaped their presidential nominating calendar, removing Iowa from the group of early states. The Democrats set South Carolina as the first nominating contest through primary conflicts in early states, meaning that the calendar is still in question. The state's party plan will also need to be approved by the National Party's Rules and Bylaws Committee. The committee found Democrats' previous delegate selection plan, which did not include a caucus date, non-compliant in June. We're going to get to the opinion page of the Courier in a little bit, but we are rapidly getting to the first half hour of our broadcast here. So I think what we'll do now is to do the obituary news column, and then we'll come back to the opinion section. And I would like to remind you that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled, and I am your narrator, Peter Welch. So let's take a look at what's going on in the obituary section of the Courier today. Okay, we've got a number of pieces of information here today. Caroline Thorpe passed away on the 25th of July. And we're going to I'm going to scroll down here a little bit quickly here to look at the when the memorials will be. The memorials may be made to Cedar Valley Arboretum, Cedar Valley Hospice at 2001 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo, Iowa 50702, or St. Thomas Episcopal. Condolences may also be left at www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. All right. Dwayne Stark passed away at the age of 92 of Camden, Missouri, formerly of Westburn, passed away. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, the 20th of September, at Haggerty Weichoff Grope Funeral Service on West Ridgeway with burial in Garden of Memories, where a military rites will be conducted by the Iowa Army Honor Guard. And visitation will be 1 hour before the service. And memorials may be directed to online condolences, and they can be left at www.haggertywaychof.com. All right. Elizabeth Schuler has passed away. Little flowers, we ask that you make a donation to TTT to support summer camp girls. These can be sent to in care of Marlene Wellner, I'm going to spell that, W-E-L-L-N-E-R, who is at 725 Greenfield Avenue in Waverly. Of course, that's Iowa, 50677. Or the Edgewater Good Samaritan Fund. And they are located at 9225 Cascade Avenue, West Des Moines in Iowa at 50266 zip code. And this is where Mom and Nana was so well cared for during the final months of her life. And you can also contact Kaiser Corson Funeral Home if you wish. And they are in charge of all of the arrangements, and you can get a hold of them at 319-352-1187. Matthew Thompson has passed. Matthew David Thompson of Grundy Center died on Saturday, on the 16th of September, at home from a cardiac event. A visitation will be held on Friday, September 22nd, from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Engelkes-Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service in Grundy Center, with a memorial service to follow immediately at 10:30 a.m. at the funeral home. A burial will take place at a later date at Rose Hill Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Cedar Bend Humane Society or the Grundy County Memorial Hospital. Okay. And let's see, we have Rosemary Hayes, who has passed away at the age of 77, of Marion. She passed on the 12th of September. And I'm just taking a quick look here. A mass of Christian burial will be at Queen of Peace Catholic Church in Waterloo at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, the 21st of September. Burial will follow at Mount Olivet Cemetery, Waterloo, following conclusion of the funeral mass. The mass will be live streamed on the parish website, and that's the following: Queen Parish.net. And a luncheon will be served at the Queen of Peace Catholic Church in Waterloo following the burial service. And finally, Barbara Elinefelt has passed at the age of 66 of Evansdale, and she passed on the 13th of September at home under Unity Point Hospice Care. And a memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, September 22nd at Lock at Tower Park at 4140 Kimball Avenue, with a visitation from 12 to 2 p.m. at Lock at Tower Park. Burial will take place in Hillside Cemetery in Cedar Falls. And memorials may be directed to the family. And condolences may be left at www.lock, that's with an E, L-O-C-K-E, funeralservices.com. All right. Let's now go back to the editorial section of our paper here today for Tuesday, the 19th of September. I am Peter Welch, and this is IRIS, Iowa Radio Information Services for the Blind, and we're about to read Opinion in the Courier. And I'm laughing because they have a cartoon, a political cartoon, and Donald Trump is sitting, in court, and the judge is looking at Trump, and she says, well, we'll take a 30-minute recess for the defendant to hold a rally. So I guess that kind of sums things up there. All right, let's take a look and see what we have here today. This is a guest column, and this was written by Dave Nagel, and it's titled, Poor Disabled Iowans Must Learn to Live Without Doctors. People who live in the metro areas of Iowa may be unaware, but good citizens who reside in rural Iowa are painfully cognizant local hospitals are in desperate financial condition and losing the fight to remain in operation. The good news? Well, the good news is if we can label it as such, and that's the problem is nationwide, well, then the numbers rural hospitals and closing is staggering and only going to accelerate. More than 600 rural hospitals nationally are facing closure, according to the Center for Healthcare Quality and Payment Reform. In the face of these developments, our governor and her conservative backers have found steps to reverse this process and are quickly seeking to implement them. The first step is to remove from the rolls those who obtained Medicaid coverage in the middle of the pandemic. Nationally, there is an effort to remove patients who can now obtain private insurance coverage or who have the means to risk going without. This is termed medical reform. The Reformation has already commenced. More than 5.5 million Americans have been dropped from coverage even before our governor's purging of patients in Iowa gets into full swing. Depending on a voter's political perception, this is good news or grounds to pause. That is because of the 5.5 million people cut from Medicaid coverage, 26% were determined to be no longer eligible. However, 74% were eliminated because of procedural problems. People and their children are losing coverage because they didn't reply to the form in time. There were mistakes made in evaluating their application, or they simply weren't notified. In addition, as reported by Amy Goldstein in the Washington Post, potentially millions of children have been improperly dropped from Medicaid rolls across many states. Federal officials have ordered 12 states to immediately review the computer process to correct the errors if found. Iowa's search and destroy mission will be conducted by the private companies that administrator or Medicaid programs called managed care organizations, whose compensation is structured to reward cuts to program costs. They will mail out to all individuals and families in Iowa on the program a 10-day notice, and if the individuals fail to respond within 10 days, they're dropped. The downside is that frequently the only source of payment for hospitals is Medicaid, and the reimbursements is inadequate, but at least some offset to care facilities cost of treatment. When the uninsured non-Medicaid patient shows up, the hospital, by its mission statement, still treats the needy. When a Medicaid patient is treated, all Iowa hospitals place them on a health training program to lessen the chance of their condition getting worse, helping them to live a healthier lifestyle. The same program will not apply to the uninsured. Being Irish, all this reminds me of the British response to the potato famine of the mid-19th century. England's answer was not to assist the Irish because they would become dependent upon the aid. Now, the pesky lower-income disabled and elderly citizens of our state who, just like the Irish, who wouldn't learn not to eat, these cantankerous people will not learn not to get sick. Not only that, but they will also take their children to the emergency room. Both parent and child will just be sicker, and the hospital still will just not be paid. The governor's other solution is not better. We're going to lower the standard of medical care for rural Iowans by permitting lesser trained people to take the place of licensed physicians. They will see a doctor only by telemedicine if needed. The American Medical Association has issued a statement that declares this step misguided. According to the AMA, this approach will result in misdiagnosis, worse outcomes, and higher costs in the range of millions of dollars. This also raises the question as to why we should have two standards of care, one for those who live in metro areas and a lower one for residents of farmlands. The solution is simple. All rural, low-income people should move to the land of the Golden Kingdom, Polk County, where the Republicans see no problem. Heck, once there, they can visit the company that used to reside in their town before being lured away with government assistance to Des Moines. Then they can get a job at a local convenience store or grocery. The people of Boone should have first option. And that, again, was written by Dave Nagel, who's a Waterloo attorney and former U.S. congressman. So that was definitely an interesting article. All right, now let's turn to the next section of the paper. This is agriculture in the Courier. Low Mississippi River limits barge traffic. Restrictions come as farmers want to move their crops. In Des Moines, a long stretch of hot, dry weather has left the Mississippi River so low that barge companies are reducing their loads, just as Midwest farmers are preparing to harvest the crops and send tons of corn and soybeans downriver to the Gulf of Mexico. The transport restrictions are a headache for barge companies, but even more worrisome for thousands of farmers who have watched drought scorch their fields for much of the summer. Now they will be facing higher prices to transport what remains of their crops. Farmer Bruce Peterson, who grows corn and soybeans in southeastern Minnesota, chuckled wryly that the dry weather had withered his family's crop so extensively they won't need to worry so much about the high cost of transporting the goods downriver. We haven't had rain here for several weeks, so our crop size is shrinking, Peterson said. Unfortunately, that has taken care of part of the issue. About 60% of the U.S. grain exports are taken by barge down to the Mississippi, to New Orleans, where the corn and the soybeans and wheat is stored and ultimately transferred to other ships. It's usually an inexpensive, efficient way to transport crops, as a typical group of 15 barges lashed together carries as much cargo as about 1,000 trucks. But as river levels drop, that cost has soared. The cargo's rate from St. Louis southward is now up 77% above the three-year average. Prices have risen because the river south of St. Louis does not remain consistently deep enough now to accommodate typical barges, forcing companies to load less into each vessel and string fewer barges together. North of St. Louis, a series of locks and dams guarantees a 9-foot deep channel as far north as Minneapolis-St. Paul, but that's not the case in the lower Mississippi. We're keeping things moving, but could see some rain. Some help from Mother Nature, said Merritt Lane, president of the Canal Barge Company of New Orleans. Canal Barge, which works much of the Mississippi, as well as the Illinois and Ohio rivers, has had to lighten loads so barges ride higher in the water. The company also can't link as many barges together because the shipping lane is narrower, Lane says. A narrowed shipping lane also means that barges from different companies must squeeze into limited space, forcing backups and delays. So what are the drought impacts causing at this point? Well, this is the second straight year drought has caused the Mississippi to drop to near record lows. With no significant rain in the forecast, it's likely to keep falling. The shallow river is especially striking given the height of the river just months ago. A huge snowpack in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin quickly melted, forcing riverfront communities such as Davenport, Iowa, and Savannah, Illinois, to hurriedly erect barriers to stay dry in late April and early May. Though floodwaters quickly receded, they left behind mountains of underwater sand, forcing the Corps of Engineers to dredge like crazy to clear out a shipping channel. And Tom Henold, who commands the Corps Rock Island District, spanning 312 miles of the Mississippi from northern Iowa south to Missouri. After the flood came through the spring, it was a touchy situation, Heinold said. In May and June, we were jumping very quickly from place to place to try to get pilot channels open as the water was dropping. Northern stretches of the river are now in good shape, but dredging continues south of St. Louis, Heinold goes on to say. Months of dry and warm weather have hit the Midwest hard, damaging crops in much of the region west of the Mississippi River. In Kansas, 40% of the soybean crop was reported in poor or very poor condition, with the same conditions for 40% of the corn crop in Missouri. The Midwest grows most of the nation's corn and soybeans, and the percentage rated good to excellent nationwide was a little more than 50%, and the worst rating in more than a decade. So you have rising costs, and Mike Steenhoek, executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, said that many Midwest farmers have multiple transportation options, among them trucking and shipments by train for use by nearby ethanol and biodiesel plants and for processing into animal feed. But the grain exported from the U.S., the higher cost of shipping down the Mississippi really hurts. It's the way that farmers in the middle of the United States connect with the international marketplace, said Steenhoek, whose group advocates for effective crop transportation systems. It allows these farmers to have a very efficient way of moving their product a long distance in a very economical manner. Barge costs eating directly into the farmers' profits come at a time when American soybean and corn exports face increased international competition, he says. From his work site beside the Mississippi River in Red Wing, Minnesota, Jim Larson watches as the river rises and falls through the seasons. And he has seen plenty of drought and floods during the 30 years in the business, and said it forces everyone who relies on the river to remain nimble. Some years you have flood, and some years have drought, and sometimes you have them both in the same year, says Larson, manager of the Red Wing Grain, a storage and grain loading operation. It's crazy, and it seems like lately we're having more of both, and so you have to be adaptable and change with the situation that is given to you. Kind of keeps you on your toes. Well, I must say, I'm sure that really most certainly does that. All right, let's press on now in the paper and see what else we have going on here in the Courier here for Tuesday. Let's take a look here at the weather. Cedar Valley's five-day forecast. All right. Well, today we're going to have a thunderstorm in spots, and it'll be a high of 83. Then tonight it will clear and be a low of 60 degrees. Wednesday, sunny intervals, and it will be a high of 84 and a low of 56. And Thursday, clouds and breaks of sun, high of 82, low of 59. Friday, sun, then some clouds, and it will be 82 degrees and a low of 64 degrees. And outlook for Saturday, it will be increasingly windy, a high of 75 and a low of 58 degrees. On the national forecast front here, much of the eastern third of the nation, except for the thunderstorms in South Florida, will be dry and mainly sunny today. Spotty storms, a few locally severe, will rumble over the plains. A few thunderstorms are also forecast for parts of the Sierra Nevada in California and the Rockies in Wyoming and Colorado. Showers will cool western Washington. All right, let's turn to a couple news pieces here as we finish up our broadcast today. We're in the 360 degrees section of the paper. This is National and World Report. And this article, again, I won't be able to read everything here, but we've got an article here taking a bite out of mosquitoes. And there's a picture of a doctor holding a jar, and it says, "A Doctors Without Borders worker releases laboratory-bred mosquitoes August 24th that are infected with bacteria that interrupt the transmission of dengue, that's D-E-N-G-U-E, in Honduras. Bugs are being bred to fight the dreaded fever." Okay, and like I said, I can't get into that because we are running low on time. Opposite paths in House and the Senate. Female leaders strike bipartisan agreements in Washington. On one side of the Capitol, two senators steered the debate over government funding, mostly clear of partisan fights, creating a path for bills to pass with bipartisan momentum. On the other side of the building, things couldn't be more different. House Republicans trying to win support from the far-right wing of the party loaded up their government funding packages with spending cuts and conservative policy priorities. Democrats responded with ire, branding their GOP counterparts as extreme and bigoted, and withdrew support for the legislation. The contrary approaches are not unusual for such fights in Congress, but the differences are especially stark this time, creating a gulf between the chambers that could prove difficult to bridge. The dynamic threat threatens to plunge the U.S. into yet another damaging government shutdown, potentially as soon as the end of September, when last year's funding expires. Leaders in both chambers are trying to protect strength as they enter negotiations that will determine the fate of billions of dollars in government programs, military aid for the Ukraine, and emergency disaster recovery funds. The Senate strategy is being led by the first female duo to hold the top leadership spots on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Senators Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, and Susan Collins, Republican of Maine. All right. Well, we do have these conflicts down there. Hopefully things will slowly begin to smooth out. And last but not least, and briefly, climate change could bring more storms in the north. In Boston, when it comes to hurricanes, New England can't compete with Florida or the Caribbean. But scientists say that the arrival of storms like Atlanta's Storm Lee could become more common in the region as the planet warms up, including in places such as the Gulf of Maine. Lee pummeled a large swath of New England and Maritime Canada with destructive winds, rough surf, torrential rains that toppled trees, flooded roads, and cut power to tens of thousands on Saturday. One person was killed in Maine when a tree limb fell on his vehicle. And we are out of time here. And I'd like to remind you that you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch. And I would like to thank you so much for listening today to the reading of the edition of the Courier for September 19th on Tuesday. Take care, everyone. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.